Tribune Tower, Chicago. This is Cap'n Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
I sit next to Duncan Keith, so he always wants to talk about hockey. So I try to pretend like I'm sleeping, put the headphones on. When we get to the hotel, guys are doing different things, resting up, getting ready for the game. And you know, Mario Kart's been a big part of our success over the past 7 years. So guys kind of turn their brains off by playing that. But at the end of the day, we're going there for a hockey game, and whatever gets you ready to play, do that.
That was the voice of Patrick Sharp talking about the Blackhawks' preparation for Game 7 tomorrow night. Anaheim, win or go home, talking about Mario Kart and its role in preparing the Blackhawks mentally for their challenge ahead. And that has been a theme every playoff series for the last seven. You hear about Mario Kart all the time. I personally have never played it.
Oh, it's the best.
Really?
Oh, it's great.
How old is this game?
It's old.
It's really old.
But like, you got the little steering
Donkey
wheels.
Kong old, Pac-Man old.
I have videos of my son playing when he was two.
Okay.
You know,
so
and he'd be like,
that old.
See ya, wouldn't want to be ya.
That's Jen Latta in for the Capman, Cap'n Haw, CSN Chicago, WGNplus.com. Okay, so tomorrow night, Game 7, the Hawks left yesterday. They're practicing today in Anaheim. Extra day rest, I think, will benefit the Hawks. Here's a question I couldn't answer. Somebody posed to me when I wrote about the Hawks' motivation from last year's Game 7 and losing to the Kings in overtime, their season ending when the puck bounced off Nick Leddy, past Corey Crawford, and the season was over abruptly. And that was the toughest loss for a lot of the Blackhawks. And I said that that was a huge factor. And then somebody sends me an email and says, you know, that's fine. That's all well and good. But the Ducks have lost the last two seasons in Game 7s too. Their seasons have ended badly after they had 3-2 series leads. What about the motivation they'll have?
Didn't we discuss that yesterday, first hour or two?
A little bit. But I don't know the difference between the motivation, except for the fact that maybe the Hawks understand what it's like to actually win a game to move on to the Stanley Cup Finals. I don't know what to expect tomorrow night. I think that Patrick Sharp put it well. In Game 7s like this, when the puck drops, every minute feels like overtime. And you feel like there's an urgency that's attached to every shift and every line change and everything that happens. So that will be exciting. I don't expect the Hawks to come out flat like they did the last time in Anaheim in Game 5. But beyond that, I have no idea. And anybody that tells you they do hasn't watched this series, because this as unpredictable and as fascinating to watch as any series you could hope for.
Yeah, it's been a little fluky at times.
Yeah.
The flurry of goals has been surprising. But I agree with you. I don't know necessarily if you can pick one psychology over the other. A team that has been there and that has tasted victory and has missed out on it since, or a team that has never achieved it. Because potentially the expectation of never having achieved it, it could be so much greater in the Ducks' minds than reality even is. You know, so it's difficult to say. It just depends on the person and on the team, to be honest.
And you wonder, you know, if who's the better hockey team? Who's the deeper hockey team? I think that's a very... that's the reason we're at Game 7, because it's not been clear. It's not been clear enough. I think the Hawks have the benefit in experience and certainly big game experience, but the Ducks have shown why they were the best team in the West in the regular season. They're deep, they're nasty, they're physical. I don't buy Ryan Kessler's continued insistence that Game 7 is going to show how much the Blackhawks have been worn down by our physicality. I think the more he says that, the more it leaves the impression that he's trying to convince somebody, maybe himself, that they are the more physical team.
Well, it could be strategy. I mean, I believe in all elements of sports. I believe that if you say something enough and it creeps into somebody's mind, even if it's one player, it can have the effect that you desire.
But he said before
mind
game
games,
six,
right?
Jen, he said before game six that no human can withstand the physical toll. Maybe there, before game
okay,
five.
Okay, but there's a and level
Brian
of humor
went
to
out.
That comment.
It was. But then he went out, Bickle, and went out and flattened Vatanen 3 times in the first shift. I think it was Vatanen twice. Vatanen. You say tomato, I say tomato. This isn't the Anaheim. You're not in Anaheim anymore. It's Vatanen, right?
It's whatever it you want it to Vatanen. Be.
Okay.
David.
Well, he flattened him. Bickle was the shoe. Vatanen was the ant. That's the way it looked. Okay? It was a collision. They're physical. All right, let's get to the phones. 312-235-2525. Talking Blackhawks. Chris Cook coming up at 11:10. Jeff is in Minneapolis. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
Yeah, I also believe that I don't think that the Anaheim has worn down the Blackhawks. I just think one of the things the Blackhawks have to do is they have to challenge the Ducks early on their rush and challenge them once they get to the blue line, not let them go all the way to the hot end with a puck. It seems like the Ducks have been having a lot of puck presence in the hot end in some of these games. You got a quick answer on that?
Well, I think that's a good observation. Thanks, Jeff, for calling. I think that when the Hawks have had as good of a puck possession game as they did the other night, good things happen. That's their game. The Ducks tried to keep them out of the game by being more physical. And I think this is an opportunity for the Hawks to take advantage of maybe a shaky Freddie Anderson, who might be not the same goalie at the end of the series as he was at the beginning. I don't know. Can't explain that. But I don't think he is. And there's a chance here for them to maybe exploit that more than they have.
Do you think that the Blackhawks should have to rely on Duncan Keith to play the type of game he played
every
in
minute
game six?
45 minutes if he can.
Like, and again, I appreciate the fact that we have acknowledged that he's a freak and that he's a machine. But there's an argument that could be made that he shouldn't have to play all that time. He shouldn't have to be carrying that load.
Well,
I appreciate
you
that
know
the
what?
Fans love if that this, yeoman effort.
If this were January, if this were February, even if this were the first round, I'd agree with you. I think it's game seven. If you want to play four defensemen the majority of the time and, you know, run Blad and Kyle Comiskey, maybe Comiskey's parked on the bench for most of the game. Get that? See what I did there? Comiskey parked. Get it? Thank you.
Well, now that you've explained
exactly.
It, yes.
Well, if you have to explain it, it's not a very good line, is it? No, it isn't. All right. But if they only have to go with four defensemen, you do it. It's game seven. If you double shift Patrick Kane from the second period on, you do it. It's game seven. You do whatever you have to do. The first game of the Stanley Cup Finals doesn't start until next Wednesday in New York or Tampa. It's not going to be in Chicago because even if it's the Hawks win, whoever they play, they won't have home ice. You've got plenty of time to rest is my point. So I think that there's a valid big picture discussion into do we rely too much on Duncan Keith? But there's no big picture about game seven. Mm-hmm. It's shift by shift, minute by minute. And if you need him, play him because this guy is a freak, as everyone has said. Let's go to Eric is in Kankakee. Good morning, Eric. Welcome to Cap'n Haw.
Good morning. How are you all today?
Great.
Okay. I'm a hockey novice, but I simply want to say, based upon the last 6 years, the Hawks' experience in the playoff should overcome the physicality that the Anaheim Ducks try to display over the last couple of playoff games. And also, in addition to that, Vinny Del Negro will let go by the Bulls because of a confrontation that he had with John Paxson. So there's confrontations there with the Bulls.
No, well, okay. So, Eric, just to correct you, Vinny Del Negro was let go by the Bulls and he had a confrontation, but not because
right.
he had a confrontation.
Right. Exactly.
He was a bad coach.
Right. I tried to make it real fast to throw that in. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I agree with you 100%. I'm just talking about the confrontations that's there. I want to stick with the hockey thing, and I just wanted to throw that in because I didn't get a chance before.
No.
You all have a great day.
Thanks, Eric. Appreciate the phone call. Absolutely. I think it makes a good point. And the distinction on Del Negro is an important one. Let's go to Tommy.
Correlation versus causation.
Yeah, there you go. Gosh, I feel like I'm in some sort of sociology class. Tommy in Chicago, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
How's it going?
Good morning. Listen, it's a pleasure to listen to you guys, but I'll make one statement only. And maybe if I have a little time, I'd like to give Jan a beer money question. The thing is, the Hawks are going to win Saturday because if you look around the locker room where the Hawks are at the salary cap, this is a legacy game for them. A lot of those guys, maybe four or five of those guys, will never play together again, and they know that this is their last shot towards the Cup. I can't see the Hawks not winning Saturday. They're playing for a lot more than just, you know, game six or game seven. They're playing for a legacy. And a lot of these people will go down in Chicago people's hearts. And now the beer money question is Jen Latta. Who were the Blackhawks known before they were the Blackhawks, before they were the Blackhawks in 1926?
I'd have no idea.
The Portland Rosebuds.
Thank you for telling me that. Maybe we'll work that into the show.
Thanks, Tommy.
Should that be a $10, $20, or $100 question, Tommy?
If you're a Hawk fan, it's only a dollar.
Thanks,
all right,
Tommy.
We'll make
appreciate
it a 10.
The phone
call. Sounds good.
I want to get to the beer money last night.
Oh, Price is Right.
The latest beer money was taped last night, and you had a great time doing it, right?
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Everybody's always great.
You know, Tommy worded that in a way that I wish I had. This is definitely more than a game seven. It's game seven, but it's a legacy game, because whenever the season ends, whether it's with a parade or a despondent locker room tomorrow night in Anaheim, there's a sense of closure. There's a finality that's going to loom for this Blackhawks team. You know, Patrick Sharp, whose voice that we heard and we're used to hearing, I don't think he's coming back next year. Brian Bickell might not be back next year. There's a lot of guys whose futures are uncertain, who we are used to seeing, and we know their nicknames and what they look like and what they play like. There's an end that is coming to this Blackhawk core that you, if you're them, you realize and you want to seize the moment, and you don't want the moment to seize you. And I think that's the reality of tomorrow night, what makes tomorrow night as special and even more significant than your typical game seven.
You know what's hilarious? I was just thinking about this. We've had this situation with the turnover at the coaches. The Joel Quenneville is the longest tenured head coach now in the major Chicago sports.
Yeah, and he's the second longest in the NHL.
I did read that as well.
Joel Quenneville, good old Q, has been here forever, comparatively.
Right, relatively speaking.
Wow, since 2008. 2000 and great, if you're a hockey fan, because that's when the Quenneville era began. All right, we're going to continue with Hawk Talk and Chris Cook, 1110, Tribune beat writer for the Blackhawks, coming up right after this. Cap and Haw, CSN Chicago and WGNplus.com.
It's Cap and Haw.
Puck comes out to Martinez. Martinez with a shot. It's in! The Kings are headed to the Stanley Cup Final! The shot by Martinez deflected and beats Crawford.
Playing that game, and, you know, we're at home, and we had a two-goal lead a couple times. We're deeper in the game, and, you know, obviously you get an overtime in a game seven, anything can happen, and, you know, those type of things. We've seen three overtime games in our series here, and, you know, there's some unpredictability there, and but game seven, as a player, I think there's one of those are the type of games you want to be a part of, and the disappointment that we exited with is something that should get us excited.
Joel Quenneville talking yesterday before leaving for California about the Game 7 memory from last year, which is what you heard Kenny Albert describing. June 1st, 2014, Alec Martinez scored in overtime, ended the Blackhawks season when the puck knocked off Nick Leddy, past Corey Crawford, and abruptly, shockingly, suddenly, the season was over. Cap and Haw, Jen Latta in for the Cap Man, and we're anticipating a Game 7 tomorrow night between the Blackhawks and the Ducks. Chris Cook joins us from Anaheim, made the trip back out there to stay in his Southern California residence, which he has been inhabiting most of this month. Good morning, Chris. How's the weather?
It's not bad. It's a little hazy, but getting very warm, so it's not too bad out here.
So yesterday, before leaving, I think Patrick Sharp described Game 7s as every shift is overtime and there's the urgency there. And I think we just had a caller, Chris, I think put it in pretty good context. This is more than a Game 7 for the Blackhawks. This is almost like a legacy game, because the next loss, if it's tomorrow night, there's going to be a lot of changes ahead, a lot of uncertainty that looms. And I think that that's the reality. So I guess it's an impossible question to answer, but I want to ask you anyway. What effect does that have on the Blackhawks' readiness, their mental preparation for a moment this big?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I asked Johnny Oduya about it the other day, because before Game 6, he's an unrestricted free agent and likely not going to be back. They're not going to be able to afford him. And he just looked me in the eye and said, you know, honestly, I'll be honest with you, I don't think about stuff like that. You can't. There's so many other things you need to worry about. What's going to happen in the future with this team, and where am I going to be next year? Is just one of those things we can't think about. So, somewhere way, way, way in the back of people's minds might be thinking, this is our last run here. This is our chance to, as you said, create a legacy here before things are broken up. Now, it'll be interesting what happens in the summer. Certainly, there are going to be some changes and probably some major changes. But, you know, they've talked all along about how this core group is in place. It's there. And Stan Bowman's been pretty adept at building players around that core group. But, yeah, if you look at it, this is big as far as where the Hawks have been in the last few seasons and where they're going to be in the next couple of seasons. So they don't want to end it here. And, just listening to a clip from Alec Martinez scoring last year just kind of brought back some memories of how close you can come to winning this thing. And if they'd have won it last year, we'd be talking dynasty, you know, but they didn't. And right now they have a chance to really cement what they can do by reaching the final again. And it's the same thing with the Ducks, you know, they won it a few years ago and they've lost the last few years in Western Conference. And this is a team that's really wants to prove itself that they're among the Western Conference powers. So both teams have a lot of motivation going in, and certainly what's going to happen in the future is there. But, boy, they just want to win after the series been so terrific the first six games.
Chris, it's hard to imagine this game not going to an inevitable overtime just with the way that this series has gone. Sorry to lock you and David into logging extra time for this. But do you think there's any truth to what Ryan Kesler has said about the physicality kind of being this cumulative effort, hoping that it cumulatively will affect the Blackhawks in Game 7?
I don't hold a lot of stock in. Of course, I'm not the one getting drilled into the boards every time. But you know, it's I think it's almost like they're grasping at straws a little bit. Maybe they're looking for a mental edge there. And you know, if they did have this plan, well, maybe they should have factored in that there's an extra day between games here. This gives a chance for guys like Marian Hossa and you know Duncan Keith and you know Nicholas Jarmolson, guys who've really been pounded and played a lot of minutes, to get that extra day of rest. I think that's going to be a big factor. So, I you know, certainly they're wearing down a little bit, but you look at Duncan Keith, he had the best game I've seen him play possibly in his career the other day, and so he's not that gassed, that's for sure.
Chris Cook from the Chicago Tribune covers the Blackhawks, and he's in Anaheim ready for Game 7 tomorrow night. Chris, yesterday talked to Eddie Olczyk, and I think that the question is a good one, and people wonder every time they see Jonathan Toews and Patrick Kane on the same line when Joel Quenneville went to that in the second period. Is this the way they're going to start the game? Is this a smart idea? When do you go to that? What's the rationale used? I don't know if it's anything more than a feel. Maybe you have a better sense of that. But do you think, number one, we'll see that right away out of the gate tomorrow night? Or do you think that they will wait and Joel will wait for the time where it feels right, where they need to spark?
You know, I don't know what Joel Quenneville's going to do there. And obviously his reasoning for keeping those two guys apart is to balance those lines a little bit. That way, you know, the Ducks can't match that number one line and stop both down to Patrick Kane. But so I don't think he'll start that way. But, you know, immediately he'd go to it if they fall behind or it's not looking like it's clicking. But, you know, I'm with Joel Quenneville and what he does there. But in my opinion, you've got to get Patrick Kane going. And Jonathan Toews is playing so well, I would put them together right away. And I understand about balance and I understand that matchups could really hurt them. But those two players that are playing at a top level and they're playing together just have this chemistry that we've seen for, what, seven seasons now or eight seasons now, and it's just remarkable. So if I'm going to get Patrick Kane going, I'm going to put the best center with him. And right now the best center is Jonathan Toews.
We've talked about guys like Saad and Shaw, obviously Kane and Toews, but one guy that fans are kind of looking towards is Patrick Sharp, who has scored a goal in 19 straight best of seven playoff series. And that streak is now in jeopardy. This is his last chance to score. You know, personal situations like that aside, why haven't his shots found home this series?
Well, the Ducks are doing a really good job of taking away his time and space. You know, Patrick Sharp's a guy who really likes to fire the puck, and he's not getting a whole lot of time and space there. And I think that's credit to the Ducks a little bit. But he's one of those guys, you know, you talk about your best players and your best players in a game like this. And he talked about it yesterday. He's really excited for this game. He knows that he can make an impact. So he's one of those guys the Hawks need to get off offensively. Same thing with Marian Hossa. I know he had a goal the other day off a terrific pass from Duncan Keith. Those are your guys who are going to lead your hockey team. And, you know, I think everybody talks about the fourth line playing well and what can we do and, you know, get some of those guys going. But if you're going to win the hockey game tomorrow, it's going to be because Jonathan Toews plays well, Patrick Kane, Marian Hossa, Patrick Sharp, and you've got to keep Duncan Keith going. So in my opinion, this is a game for Patrick Sharp to really just kind of get away from all those ills that hasn't really happened during the postseason thus far, score a big goal, or at least create some chances. That's the thing. He's not even creating that many chances, which is unusual for him. And you've got to get momentum going as far as in-game. And if he gets some scoring opportunities, they can get the Hawks going.
Yeah, last two games, I think in that third line, he's probably been the third most dangerous player behind Vermette and Toews. I mean, those two guys have really, since the healthy scratch, been more dangerous than Patrick Sharp has been on that line. So that's a great point. So, Chris, before we let you go, at the beginning of the series, I think Frederik Andersen could be arguably was the guy controlling it. And I think when you look at the way that his series has gone, I wonder if, you know, are the Hawks, how much has his confidence been compromised heading into a Game 7, and how can the Hawks take advantage of that?
He's saying all the right things, and I don't know Frederik Andersen as far as, you know, his psyche, because we haven't been around him much, but it seems to me that they're in his head a little bit. He'll never admit to that. The Ducks will never admit to that. And as soon as you mention it, they say, well, we're in Corey Crawford's head. But Frederick Anderson was so strong in the first couple of games, you thought, boy, he's just going to steal this series. But now you're scoring 4 or 5 goals on this guy. I think Hawks, maybe they haven't solved him, but they've got a very good idea how to beat him. And certainly it's pucks on net. And we've talked about that all season long. You've got to get pucks on net. But the Blackhawks are really making concerted effort to throw everything they can at him. And look at some of the goals that have gotten past Anderson, especially the one the other night. And, you know, when Jonathan Tate scores along the goal line, those are the kinds of things the Blackhawks need to do. They realize if they get pucks on net on this guy, then he's not that, you know, he's pretty fallible. So I think that's something that the Hawks are looking forward to. And Anderson, as I said, saying all the right things, but somewhere he knows the Blackhawks might have got the formula to beat him.
If you cover hockey for a living, and you do, this has got to be a great weekend. I mean, even though, you know, we're traveling, you're tired, we're on deadline, you've got in the NHL tonight Game 7 in the Eastern Conference, tomorrow night Game 7 in the Western Conference Final. It's the first time since 2000 that's happened. It's only the second time since 1968 that it's happened. This is a great showcase for the league. It's been a tremendous postseason. And when you stack it up against the NBA playoffs, I don't think there is any comparison, Chris. And I think this series has been one of the best going. And I think these playoffs for the NHL, they have to look at this and say, wow, our sport is really as popular and as good as it's been in a while.
No, what a showcase the NHL. And you're right, as far as the NBA, you know, and it's easy to be a cynical sports writer and, you know, deadlines and travel and all that. But I got to tell you, there are national media from all over North America in Anaheim for the Blackhawks team. And we're all going out tonight. We're going to watch an Eastern Conference game because that's playoff hockey. You know, we love to watch hockey. We love to watch hockey at its highest level. So we're going to go out and we're going to watch and we're going to have a good time doing that and just kind of appreciate what's going on here. And I thought that series last year, the Kings and Blackhawks, was maybe the best postseason series I've ever seen. And this one's certainly rivaling it. It's just great fun.
I feel kind of left out. I'm going to be on a plane.
Get over. We'll save a spot for you.
All right, save me a spot. Don't know. Depending on the airlines, get me there on time. We'll see. But thanks, thanks for joining us, Chris. We'll see you tomorrow, if not tonight. And Game 7 is going to be as fun to cover as we'll be to watch. So appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it, guys.
Chris Cook, Chicago Tribune beat writer for the Blackhawks, out in Anaheim covering Game 7, getting ready for Game 7 of the Eastern Conference Finals tonight as well. I know that you're kind of late. You know, you said yesterday you're sort of late to the hockey party, but this weekend is as good as it gets for hockey fans.
Absolutely. And it's exciting. And
I don't know what to expect.
It's the only thing on the docket.
It is. I mean, you know, you got the Cubs and the Royals. That'll be cool. You know, great. A lot of Royals fans in town. Sox in Houston. Yeah, that's cool. But it's Game 7. Game 7 tonight. What do Hawks fans want? I think they want the piece of the Lightning? Do you think they want the Rangers to win? Does it matter? Are you only fixated on winning tomorrow night in Anaheim? I don't know. All these questions. But Mark Carman is here for some answers. Not necessarily on the Blackhawks, but Mr. Bull, Mr. Indy 500, Mr. Sports. Mr. Sports Mark Carman joins us next from fansided.com and everybody's favorite utility man here at the Cap and Haw Show. Jen Ladd in for the Cap Man. See us in Chicago and WGNplus.com.
From Tribune Tower Chicago, this is Cap and Haw on WGNplus.com and CSN Chicago.
John, along those lines, you're saying that if you'd won the championship, he'd still be here. If the players had universally supported Tom when he had their meetings, would that have changed things?
Who's to say? I don't know that. I don't know the answer to that.
Oh, this is awkward.
The first voice you heard was that of Mark Carman asking a question of John Paxson yesterday at the press conference at the United Center.
A legitimate question.
Yes, a legitimate question. Did not get much of an answer. Got an answer.
Couldn't have thought it was going to get much of an answer.
No. Cap'n Haw, CSN Chicago, WGNplus.com. Jen Latta is here for the Catman again today. And we bring into the program Mark Carman, the man who asked the question for fansided.com and also for WGN Radio. Okay, Carm, so number one, what were you getting at? And number two, how would you characterize Pax's response?
Well, he was clearly irritated at the start of the question when I said, you just said that if you had won the championship, because a lot of people didn't believe that Tibbs was out of here regardless of what happened.
So you think if they would have won the championship, had a parade, they still would have fired him?
I think that if they had gotten by the Cleveland Cavaliers, which had been a monumental accomplishment, and they had lost to Golden State,
they still fire him?
I think they probably still fire the guy. So I just it was hard for me to believe, at least, that
I'm with him.
Okay.
You know, so that to me was surprising. I wish I would have phrased that differently, but I think what a lot of people want to know is, what are the players saying about Tibbs? And he wasn't going to come clean with that, obviously. But there's definitely been an erosion of support for Tibbs in that locker room. As much as they will, I think, respect him and appreciate him and know that he worked as hard as he possibly could to give them success, and he brought a lot of them, you know, Jimmy Butler, Joakim Noah, long list, Lou Aldang, you know, up from here to there. But I think there's some...
Is it old school, archaic, naive to think, on one hand, because some people will hear that and have this reaction, is like, well, if the players don't like playing for a coach, big deal. They're players. There's a coach. If the coach is good enough, let him... He's the one who sets the terms. The players have to be the ones who are compliant.
Man, that just does not acknowledge the evolution of the league at all.
I think you're right. But you know that response is not invalid totally, because at some point, are you letting the players who showed some resistance to Tom Thibodeau's ways this year, and there were some prominent players who did that, you're basically catering to them. This is their team.
Yeah, listen, if the Bulls had a player like LeBron James or Kevin Durant when he's not hurt, who had his back, maybe things are different. I mean, the Bulls' best player is Derrick Rose. You can call Jimmy Butler out and what he's done, but Derrick Rose is their best player. Derrick Rose, because he's been hurt, he doesn't have the cachet to walk into Gar or Pax's office and say, I want Tibbs. He just doesn't have that power.
And maybe he doesn't feel that way.
And maybe he doesn't feel that way. But I think you have to, at the bare minimum, what I'm getting at is, if you're Tibbs or any coach, you have to be aligned with the stars on the team. If there's one guy that hates you, be it a Nikola Mirotic-level guy, well, that's no big deal. Or even a couple guys like that. But you got to have the top.
Mark Carman from Fansided.com and WGN Radio in studio with us, talking Bulls and whatever else you want to talk about, Carm. We talk Kansas City Royals if you want. I saw you on a Kansas City radio station this morning.
Ha is 24/7, man. You do not get anything by him.
Were you on Kansas City radio this morning?
I was on the...
Just fill in the details.
I was on the competitor station. I used to work for 610. I was on 810 today.
My
old station... The rules are you cannot have At the Carm on, which is just really irritating to At the Carm, if I may put myself in.
Why? Did you
what
leave
What is happening
in a huff?
Here, Jimmy?
I was on a great show, and the leader of that show left, and I got thrown in the trash heap, and for whatever reason, despite my love for 610, who gave me an opportunity to grow as a broadcaster, they won't have me.
You were banned from a station?
I apparently am banned. I mean, my guy is, they're doing shows from Wrigley, my old station, today. And I texted, because I'm asked, one of the guys on the show is staying at my house this week. And I said, the only way that dude is sleeping in my house is if you put me on the show today. And he's like, well, we can't have you on. I'm like, that? At least it's a reason. Like, I thought I was just being dissed. But okay, fine. There's a reason you can't have me on. That's absurd. But okay, fine.
That's so bizarre.
That's a little immature. Okay, so back to the Bulls. Overall, as entertaining as your work history would be to chronicle.
thanks, Dave.
So, no, the Kansas City days. That's a chapter in the Carm book I'd want to read.
Oh, I appreciate that.
So, yesterday, how overall would you characterize the press conference? I felt like there was almost a, and I think, I mean, we talked about it yesterday, I don't want to say celebratory tone, but there was seemed to be a lot of...
ding dong.
Yeah, the vibe wasn't what you would expect at a press conference announcing a firing.
Yeah, I mean, when I walked in there, everyone's smiling, and you know, normally when you go into a firing, especially for a guy who's the quickest coach in the history of the NBA to win 100 games and has a 65% winning percentage and did a lot of great things here, it would almost feel like you're going to a funeral. It did not have that feeling at all. It was like, okay, fine, we've made a decision, we're moving on, everybody knew this, and let's, you know, take a deep breath and look positively towards the future. So that to me was odd. But as the press conference went along, you could see the tension, especially in Pax building. I mean, he did not want to be there clearly. And it was not a very long press conference. I mean, there was
25 minutes.
Right. And I'm sure you had more questions.
Yes.
I had questions, and Casey Johnson, whoever else would have asked, probably they could have at least sat there another 15, 20 minutes.
Well, put it this way. I don't think that Fred Hoiberg's introductory press conference will be 25 minutes.
Exactly.
Because I think they will want to answer every question and exhaust every detail and you know.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a fair comparison, right? ushering in a new era. Certainly there's going to be a celebratory theme to it. They're willing to be open. I think that
probably
were things that they wanted to divulge. There were clearly things that they did not want.
They wanted to control the message, and they did control the message.
With your question, Mark, they certainly didn't want to throw players under the bus.
Right. And I put him in an awkward spot, perhaps, because what's he going to say, really, at the end
of the day? Well, don't back down now. You can't take it back.
I'm not saying it was a bad question. I think it's a very fair question. But the reality, you have to think about, are you going to get an answer to that question?
Right. Probably not.
Oh, but gosh, we should not stop asking questions that we know we won't get the answer to, because at least there's an accountability asking.
Have you been in a situation that comes to mind when you asked a question that you knew you weren't going to get an answer to?
I mean, I covered the Bears for two seasons under Mark Trestman, so.
Yeah, that happens
pick a
lot.
Week.
That happens a lot in the NFL.
He would smile wryly at me like, oh, Jen.
Wait.
You're so.
Riley W. Oh, I thought you said smile Riley. I was thinking Riley, like Riley, you got Riley Curry on the brain. Like, you know, that would have been great. Bring your kid to work day and sit at the press conference. That would have lightened the mood yesterday.
Yeah, perhaps. Maybe
a child.
Maybe Pax.
Or a puppy.
Oh, I could make a joke here.
No.
I'm not sure where Jen's going, but I'm very interested.
No.
Okay, fine.
I'll hold on to it.
Well, Pax's kids are grown, so, you know, and one of his kids is in the military.
Do you
right?
think that it will be a long process to get Fred Hoiberg here? Do you think it will be is it already done? Do you think they're just waiting to give it more time so there's a lag time between the firing and the hiring?
I don't see any reason to not believe the reports out there that he'll be done before the first game of the finals, which is June 4th, which is very in short order. So we're going to be back at the United Center after the – not for a Blackhawks game after they went on Saturday night, but we'll be back there Monday, Tuesday next week perhaps, and Fred Hoiberg will be introduced. I mean – okay, they got the draft's coming. You want to have your coach in place. There's no sense in waiting around. They got a little bit of flack for waiting. Well, what's taking so long on Tibbs? And if you believe the Bulls, well, they were conducting their exit interviews and all that. But I mean, they knew. There's no way they didn't know that he was going to be gone after the Van Gundy incident. I guess that because that turned apparently from Reinsdorf was done at that point.
Is that understandable to you both? I mean, do you understand why Jerry Reinsdorf had such a negative reaction to Jeff Van Gundy's comments in January? And look, I sat here in this chair or that chair or one of these chairs and criticized Jeff Van Gundy for, okay, just let it go. You're getting one side of the story. You're really not representing the truth here enough already. Okay, but that's
previously, I stand by. I think over the course of time here, they've been very unfriendly. They haven't been pro-coach. And I think you go all the way back to Doug Collins' time here and then to Phil Jackson and going on and on and on. The only thing I have to be concerned with is that everything I say, unfortunately, is taken like it's coming from Tom, which is not true, as Hawes has called for basket interference, because, you know, I speak for myself. This is something that I believe in, and, you know, John Paxson, to be fair, said he thought what I said was pathetic. He was so mad at me, I thought I had traded LaMarcus Aldridge for Tyrus Thomas and not him.
Well, that was a cheap shot, and I think that was what I said, but I understand that Jerry Reinsdorf would be upset by that, but I don't know that I would think that it would be anything more than that.
Right.
It seemed like he didn't let it go.
Yeah, I mean, it's
surprising.
But again, this goes to the theme that we've seen, which is everybody involved feeling the need to defend themselves and defend their positions, right? Because it wasn't enough for Jeff Van Gundy to just go out and say what he said initially. It was that he either was encouraged to or felt the need to defend that stance that time. You know, we're seeing Jerry Reinsdorf feeling the need to defend the franchise's decision to part ways. And we're seeing Gar and Pax feeling
they
the need.
They care about perception. They just don't know how to manage it.
See, that's the interesting thing to me. I mean, the reality is this is an organization that said organizations win championships when they had Michael. And clearly, when you have the best player in the game, you're at a huge advantage. Take a look at the Cleveland Cavaliers right now, who remade a 500 roster on the fly and now have a great chance to win the whole thing. All they did was add shooters and rebounders. You had that advantage. But we heard that organizations win championships. Okay, fine. It's 17 years now. They've won 5 playoff series, 4 with Tibbs, and they've been to the Eastern Conference Finals once, and they've won one game. I would think that – but my point is that the United Center's been sold out the whole time. The Bulls haven't gone anywhere. The fandom is incredibly strong, and they'll be back there next year. So why they worry about that so much confuses me, because they don't really need to. The team is well-supported and will be. And so who cares what Jeff Van Gundy says? It doesn't matter.
That's an interesting way to look at it, because now if you do care about perception, and Jeff Van Gundy was what bothered you so much that you were, you know, basically that was the breaking point in the relationship between Tom Thibodeau and Jerry Reinsdorf, if we're, you know, believe what we've been told. Perception-wise, they're getting killed today nationally. Sports Illustrated, Yahoo Sports, Adrian Wojnarowski, Chris Mannix, NBA.com has been critical. Our guy Steve Ashburner. There are guys who have been respected NBA journalists who have come out against the Bulls and made them look and described this as a shoddy process. That doesn't help matters. It's not a good look this week for the Bulls.
See, and I don't think that Thibodeau should be held responsible for Jeff Van Gundy expressing what was discussed between the two of them. Doesn't everybody have the right to vent? Don't we all vent to our peers, our friends, you know, our confidants?
Yeah.
When we have a situation that is weighing on us.
Those are some of the best commercial breaks.
If there had been a better relationship between the front office and Thibodeau, perhaps even the Jeff Van Gundy comments, you walk in and you're like, hey, man, what was Jeff saying on the broadcast the other night? What's that about? Let's talk about this. But because it had been fractured so greatly, it was the point of no return.
Right.
Then that just exacerbates the dysfunction. Instead of, again, being a point where you say, okay, this has really gotten out of hand. Let's handle this. Let's manage this. Let's deal with this.
And the other side of it, too, is, and I agree with everything you're saying, Jen, the other side is it's really not fair to hold Tibbs as this one guy that couldn't get along and was in his own office and was just incorrigible. Look at the history. I mean, and I'm not trying to put it's your fault. They're all in it together. But I think that's clear. Pax didn't get along with Vinny, and he didn't get along with Skiles, and the way that went down was not professional.
Vinny was more an egregious thing, I think, than Skiles. And because I think with the way it went down with Vinny and the way it ended, that was more of a bridge-burning experience. This was a bridge-burning experience. Skiles, not so much. I mean, I understood Skiles, even though it came down and ended clumsily. You know, Skiles might have checked out too. You know, I think that's
fair.
To me, it makes that experience. It certainly wasn't ideal. But his shelf life, yeah, it had expired. And maybe Tom Thibodeau's had too. The way it ended, though, was very clumsy.
Right, that's the other thing. Listen, he's been here 5 years. It's a long time in NBA circles. 5 years for head coach, I mean, that's better than average. So they don't have to necessarily feel bad about it, but the way it was handled, and it's so much behind the scenes with the negativity, it just didn't have to be that way.
He's Mark Carmen from Fansided.com. Jen Latta in for the Cap, man. We come back, we'll continue NBA and Bulls talk. Got a couple questions I want to ask Carm about what's next for the Bulls. Wintrust loves a good rivalry. Who doesn't? I know I do. Here in Chicago, we've got one of the best. Cubs versus Sox, North Side, South Side, Blue versus Black. Put your money where your heart is, Chicago. Decide for your side with a Cubs or White Sox checking account from your local Wintrust Community Bank, just like the Catman. It even comes with your very own Cubs or Sox debit card so you can show your baseball pride every time you make a purchase. How cool is that? Plus, you can cheer for your team by tweeting or Instagramming with hashtag DecideCubs or hashtag DecideSox. When you choose, either online or at the bank, you'll help Wintrust donate up to $500,000 to Cubs and White Sox charities. Follow along online to see whose fans are cheering the loudest and learn more at Wintrust.com/YouDecide. Banking services provided by Wintrust Community Banks. Chicago Cubs and Chicago White Sox trademarks used with permission. Member FDIC. Back with Cap and Haas. See us in Chicago and WGNplus.com.
It's the Cap and Haas Show on WGN Plus and Comcast Sportsnet.
I think the difference was the glass. They rebounded us 52-37 and just kind of had their way on the offensive glass down there. You know, it's as tough. It's as tough a loss as I've ever been a part of. You know, with what we had going, I thought the momentum we had coming into this tournament, you know, and then just to go out there and not play very well. You know, again, UAB had a lot to do with that, so give them credit.
That was Fred Hoiberg, Iowa State head coach, back in March after losing to UAB and maybe his last game as the Iowa State head coach. Kapanhaw, Jen Latta in for Cap, Mark Carmen from fansided.com and WGN Radio here in studio.
Really that jammed up a lot of brackets, if you recall.
He did. Yeah, Iowa State did jam up a lot of brackets by losing. But I heard that, and I remember Mike played that the day they lost with the music there, foreshadowing this. He sounds like Bill Belichick. His voice he's got a little Bill Belichick in him.
Can we
hear just a little portion of that again? He's got a little Belichick. I mean, the monotone nature of it. I know it was after a loss, but
the difference was the glass. They rebounded us 52-37, and just kind of had their way on the offensive glass down there. It's tough. It's as tough a loss as I've ever been a part of.
Doesn't that sound like Belichick?
A little. I thought it was Paxson at first, to be honest.
he's being compared to Steve Kerr. Right?
Yeah, I want to ask you, what do you think of that? Because how is Fred Hoiberg inheriting the Bulls and their roster different or light or similar, if you want to make that argument, to Steve Kerr inheriting the Warriors after Mark Jackson?
Well, it's an incredibly utopian view that, right?
That's a great way to put it.
That, okay, look at Steve Kerr. So Fred Hoiberg can do the same thing. Well, they're both white and they both can shoot. And, you know, they both have had tenures in NBA front offices. And look at the success that Kerr has had. Steve Kerr would never, ever, ever sound like Fred Hoiberg sounded right there. Steve Kerr is a incredibly gregarious, interesting, can connect easily with people, human being. Fred Hoiberg, sure, he's a fine guy and I don't know him super well, but he does not have the personality of Steve Kerr. So, and I think that's a big part of it. You're talking about
communication,
somebody coming in here. I'm not saying he's not going to be successful, but he's got to come in here, and as much as maybe some of the Bulls players were ready for a different voice, he still has to earn some trust over there. And, you know, as far as the fandom goes, is this guy really going to resonate? I mean, time will tell, but I don't think it's fair to compare him to Steve Kerr. Steve Kerr is one of the most interesting guys really in the history of the NBA in the last 20 years or so. That guy's fascinating.
Wow. That's a...
Well, his dad was...
high praise.
His dad was murdered in Beirut. He's just a different guy. I don't know.
The personality aspect, Karma, I do wonder. We had Will Perdue on earlier, and he... you know, vouch for Hoiberg. He was a former teammate of his. He thinks he's really has a right demeanor for a head coaching job. I don't know what to expect because I don't know what much of his history. Casey Johnson knew him covered him as a player. We talked to the columnist from the Ames Tribune who said that he's as qualified for the Chicago market and all the things that go with being an NBA head coach as anybody he could imagine. So he comes highly recommended.
I am optimistic on him. I think it's a compelling hire. I would say that, and a lot more compelling certainly than Alvin Gentry or somebody of that ilk, or some guy who's had a chance and didn't succeed. I think that he could very well be a great coach. I just think the Steve Kerr comparison, he's not going to be that guy. He's not going to be somebody that you look forward to talking to like Joe Maddon or doesn't seem to be his personality.
Plus the Bulls roster and the Warriors roster.
Right.
I mean, the Bulls have a very competitive roster. I don't know that it's, they don't have the same type of weapons. They don't run the same offense. It's a different style. It's different stylistically to make that argument.
Well, and let's ask this question, too. Let's say that Fred comes in here and the Bulls have the same year they had last year or worse. You know, what does that mean? Does that mean that, A, Gar or, hey, Pax – Are they on blast? I don't think they are. I think
they're not, because the chairman is around and the loyalty will outweigh any sort of dissatisfaction with any of their job performance. But the pressure from a perception standpoint intensifies for Gar and Pax. There's no question about it.
Is there any such Rooney rule in the NBA? It's interesting because there are several candidates out there, minority candidates out there, names that have been floated out there. I don't know what responsibility the Bulls have to interview some of those men, even if they've already nabbed their guy. You see that happen in the NFL sometimes where
a team
knows who they want, but they still go through the process.
I don't know that there's any such rule in the NBA. I don't know that there's a comparable
and
rule that mandates you to interview a minority candidate.
I'm not sure either, but I would assume that Adrian Griffin is going to get an interview here. If they're going to actually conduct interviews, which they do have to do, be it white, black, men, women, whatever. So I think they'll interview Adrian. He's a guy that's gotten looks around the league.
He got a look from Philadelphia, right? Atlanta.
His name's been around a bunch of organizations, which is interesting to me.
Is he the backup plan?
I don't know that. He's a very quiet guy. It's hard to get to know him at all, aside from the fact that assistant coaches don't talk to
him. He was
a
leader as a player.
Right.
He's a popular assistant. He knows this team. He knows this organization. He's also not going to challenge this organization. How important is that in the next coach? Because as we heard, they want an open, creative learner. I have never really heard that term applied to a head coach before in professional sports, but a creative learner. Okay, I want somebody to win.
Yeah, that was some interesting dialogue there. I would say that getting along with Gar and Pax is an enormous
priority. Did you feel like you were at a corporate seminar? Like there were a lot of bureaucratic language being thrown around there, like you were at a human resources session.
Yeah, I didn't know what I was hearing, really. I'm like, what exactly is going on up there?
But that's not a reflection on the press conference as much as it is on you.
Perhaps.
Shot. See, no, that was a shot.
I got an Iowa degree
that
here,
was a petty
Jen.
Shot, but you're not a petty person. I'm learning. Okay?
Very good. I'm so glad I've been here to enlighten you to some of
made
these
an impact.
Nuances in conversation. Obviously, Mark Jackson's name has been out there as well, not related to the Bulls, but as a out-of-work former head coach.
I don't think he's got a shot with the Bulls.
That's what I've been hearing.
Yeah, because too much Van Gundy-ism. Too related to the New York Knicks Van Gundy tree.
You know what's interesting as well, though, is sometimes when you do separate from a person, an employee, a relationship, you find yourself more tolerant towards things. Like, so because this relationship was so irreparable, because it was so bad, Hoiberg may have a really long leash because it won't be anywhere near as catastrophic as this situation was, right? So there's a chance that it's just like anybody but Thibs. We got our guy. We're going to give him kind of a little bit more leeway because it's not the same situation as before. Well, do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do know what you're saying, but he's got to win at a higher rate than Thibs to keep the pressure off him to make it look like he actually can coach.
You would think from an outward perspective, yes, but perhaps internally, hey, we just get along. Everybody, this is a much better environment. Players aren't avoiding.
As I said,
they're gonna be
the friendliest and most professionally healthy sixth seed in the East next year.
Yeah, and the heat is on from a contract and age standpoint too. I mean, Noah's in the final year of his deal. Powell's gonna be 35 years old. Taj is going to have 1 year left after next year. So if they don't get there, I mean, they're probably going to have to face reality and look at it. Well, where are we going to go? So Hoiberg could be dealing with a completely different roster in a couple of years, most likely, and then he's dealing with, you know, coming in this season.
Bottom line question, are the Bulls closer to a championship having fired Tom Thibodeau than they were before when he was employed?
I do think that the negative feeling around the organization, however you want to put it, this year absolutely impacted the team. I don't think they were together at all. I think it showed itself in a real ugly manner in game 6 in the last game where they completely just basically gave up. I mean, that's really how to call it. So I think from that standpoint, they are better.
Carm, thanks for being here.
My pleasure as always.
Appreciate,
guys.
Always good to see
showing
you.
Up the day
good
after
to see you too,
the
Jen.
Press conference, and fansided.com is where you can read his stuff. WGN Radio, you can hear him often and also hear from time to time filling in for Cap or I or whoever. So that is a big weekend ahead on Comcast Sportsnet as well, right,
Big
Jen?
Night tonight. We've got Cubs versus the Royals, an interleague battle today at 2:30. We've got Cubs postgame live after that, Sportsnet Central after that. Sox at Houston tonight at 7 p.m. Chicago Fire also on our air on Saturday. That is at 7 p.m. And a brand new episode of Beer Money this Sunday at 9 p.m. where we find the finest and most intelligent of all
awesome.
Of the Chicago sports fans.
Big day here at WGN Radio. Congratulations to everyone getting inducted into the Walk of Fame. Dave Ennett is in the group. It's a group of 10. Steve Bertrand and a large esteemed group. Congratulations to them, class acts. Also, shout out Carol Hankner, 50 years WGN, last day today. Thank you, Carol, for all you do.
Carol.
She's the rock. Thanks for watching. Have a great weekend.